one race officer speaking.
Hello everyone and greetings from Auckland, the home of course of the 36th America's Cup, which right now is just a matter of days away from starting. So the final showdown for the oldest trophy in world sport is obviously the topic of this month's podcast. Coming up for you, we have a very special preview with the two teams in contention for AC36. The defenders, Emirates Team New Zealand, and the challengers, Lunarossa Prada Pirelli. It's not all running to plan here in Auckland. Some of you may have heard that the Cup has been delayed while we go through a period of coronavirus-induced lockdown. The authorities here are very proactive on stopping the spread of the virus. So as I record this, we're under level 3 lockdown here. We can still work. Some of our interviews have been done remotely. My interview with Lunarossa was done just before lockdown was announced, but it has made things slightly harder this month. With that in mind, a quick word about part 2, which will see my Cup co-commentator colleague and very good friend, Kenny Reid, joining us for a breakdown of what we know going into the first Cup weekend. We'll talk about what we saw in the Challenger selection series, looking back at the predictions we made a whole 2 months ago when all the racing first started here in Auckland. And we'll be joined by a very special guest, a man I've known for a long time, an ex-teammate of mine from back in the Extreme Sailing Series days, and one of the linchpins of Ben Ainslie's Ineos Team UK, the very chatty David Freddie Carr. Kenny and I are in the same production bubble at ACTV, so sat down together for the podcast, and Freddie very kindly dialed in from his lockdown bubble. He joins Kenny and I in part 2 to talk a bit about the pain of losing the Challenger selection series, but also to talk about what they learned about successful Challenger Lunarossa and how he thinks the Cup match could go down. We've got all of that coming up in part 2 as a preview to your America's Cup viewing. It's an insightful listen. Before we get going, a heartfelt thanks for the feedback on the last podcast. Giles Scott was very generous with his time. It was great to sit down ahead of the Prada Cup finals here in Auckland, and many of you enjoyed what Giles had to say. So thanks for your messages. It's so important for us that you like, comment and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. So, coming up in the next hour, we're chatting to two key figures from the two teams about to go head-to-head for the honour of lifting the most elusive trophy in our sport, the America's Cup. As a preview to this exciting showdown from the defender Emirates Team New Zealand, we talked to supercoach Ray Davies as we discuss what the team have been up to over the past few months while the challengers have been fighting it out in the Challenger Series. We discuss the team's thoughts on successful challenger Lunarossa, and we look at how the New Zealand team plan to go about defending the hard-won trophy. But first up, we talk to Francesco Bruni, helm of the Italian challengers Lunarossa Prada Pirelli. Francesco has been key to the team's success here in Auckland, sharing the helming and flying duties with Cup legend Jimmy Spittle. Between them, the pair have sailed Lunarossa into the America's Cup final for the second time in the Italian team's history and have beaten Ineos and American Magic to the honour of challenging against the New Zealand team. It's an honour that does not pass Bruni by as he prepares to represent his country on the greatest stage in the sport of sailing. I hope you enjoy the hour I spent with the two teams from the 36th America's Cup match.
I guess we have done a better job than the others. We felt guilty a couple of times on not sealing the deal. They are not unbeatable, I don't think, but they will definitely be a hard opponent for sure.
As we all know in sailing, the America's Cup is a trophy steeped in history. But for the Italian team here at AC36, there is a hope that their history will be reversed when they head out into the waters of the Hauraki Gulf. They are attempting to become the first ever Italian team to win the elusive trophy. But they've been here before. In 2000, sailing in their first ever cup campaign, also here in Auckland, they reached the final against Team New Zealand, but lost out. 5-0 to a star-studded Kiwi team. 21 years later, and this is their fifth cup campaign, but just their second appearance in the cup match. To get here, they beat INEOS Team UK in the Prada Cup final, beating the British boat 7-1. Throughout the Challenger series, the Italian team has remained calm and composed. But on winning against Ainsley's British team, the calm exterior crumbled. I was dockside waiting for the return, and we're going to get a glimpse now of what followed. Their sleek AC-75 was greeted at their base by a cacophony of celebration from family, friends, and fellow team members that went on well into the night. It was a massive outpouring of joy from a team determined to do their very best, to seize the opportunity and make the most of their fast, capable boat. At the centre of celebrations, portside helm Francesco Bruni knows only too well how rare an opportunity the team have given themselves. And so I started off our chat with a question about the win against INEOS and how relieved the team were to make it to the cup match.
It means a lot. There were not many competitors in the Prada Cup, but there were high standards. And we knew that it was easy to just do the wrong step and be out early like the Americans, or you know, lose the opportunity to get to the America's Cup. And for us, was very important to get to the America's Cup at the least. And that doesn't mean that we are satisfied with what we did, but you know, to do the America's Cup, you need to win the selection series, and it's a big step for us.
How confident were you going into the final? I mean, you hadn't beaten INEOS, Ben Ainsley, of course. You hadn't beaten them in the round robin event, and they looked pretty quick. They seemed to have sorted out all their boat issues. How worried about them were you?
I think that's part of the relief is because we were not underestimating Ben. Actually, I was a little worried. I was worried mainly because the two races, the races that we lost to Ben, we lost them mainly for wrong tactics call. So mainly our mistakes. And to face them again was, we knew that the boat was going better and we were sailing better. The experience with the Americans in the semifinals, for sure, we knew that we were one step ahead compared to when we faced them in the round robin. But we also knew that Ben and Giles were a very strong afterguard, and all the other guys around them as well. I know them all personally, and I know how good of sailors they are. So we knew that we were facing very strong competitors. That's why probably I personally was a little nervous, and but I was very focused as well, knowing that only the concentration and nothing else could have helped me to win. So at the end of the whole series, that's why the relief was there.
Let's talk a bit about you. I mean, it's not what you've come here to do, but it was really hard fought, that win. And after the races, I mean, the release of emotion from you was, I mean, it was clear for the world to see. I mean, what did it mean to Francesco Bruni?
I think it was also a little bit of a natural joke, because for some reason, Jimmy was very straight after the question. Like when he said it was a very good day at the office, I said, "Oh, come on!" it came natural to me to react that way, and was a little bit of a joke as well. I think I was happy. Don't get me wrong; I was clearly very happy. We were all clearly very happy, but I guess we react in different ways.
I mean, you have to celebrate your wins along the way.
We're all different, and Jimmy's quality for sure is the amount of concentration and the way he concentrate and he focus, and I guess the relief was not there for him yet.
I know we're on the other side of the world here, but I mean, what sort of indication have you had that it's big at home? How big a story is it back in Italy?
Well, in Italy, there are a lot of people waking up at night, a lot of them. Sometimes I heard numbers like 10 million of people watching the races overnight, like 4 o'clock. I guess I'm also thinking there cannot be a worse time, because, you know, midnight, you can stay up late, or, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, you can wake up early, but 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, it's right in the middle. And people can still put their wake up calls on and follow the races. It's amazing. There are so many messages and emails, and the socials are going crazy. Italy is following very hard, maybe also because of the pandemic. So people are staying home a lot, and they want to really have a feel that Italy is doing well on something. And I guess that's the case.
At the beginning of the year, Francesco, Luna Rossa, I mean, it looked like it had potential, but there were still some mistakes, wasn't there? Inconsistencies. By the Prada Cup final, we were all describing the boat and commentary as smooth, slick, fast. I mean, she looked really stable. Where did those gains come from, and what did it take to achieve that transformation?
I think the best guy to push during the series is probably Jimmy. He's been through something that was amazing in San Francisco, coming back from an 8-1 to a 9-8. And he's got this experience behind his shoulders, and he knows more than anybody how important it is to keep progressing during the series. We are talking about like 2 months or 3 months racing. So you can just think of getting there, being ready, and perform in the same way during the whole series. And I think the whole team has been pushing a lot to improve during this period. And also another huge help was coming from our coaches, Jacopo and Philippe. They've been doing a fantastic job, and Vasco for the performance side. So yeah, I think as a team, we have been working very well on reacting to problems and making a progression and improving in general.
Did Jimmy, I guess Jimmy has worked with your coaching team before. I mean, did they set the culture of that? I mean, in a normal yacht race, you know, you turn up as prepared as you can on day one and you see how it goes. I mean, this is really different here.
It's very different. And every team does the same thing, like trying to improve also during the series. But I guess we have done a better job than the others. That's my feeling.
There's less than 2 weeks between the Prada Cup final and the match. What are the areas that you need to work on, Francesco? What will the focus be, and how can you step up once again?
I think we have to really work on every department. There is not one that is more important than the other. And we know that the Kiwis are a very strong team. They are very good in all the conditions. So we have to really focus on improving the speed of the boat, but also spending a lot of hours in the water, trying to minimize mistakes in the maneuvers, in the starts. So, and which is pretty much what we've been doing so far. Just that we don't have to, I guess the most important one is we don't have to feel successful just because we won the Prada Cup.
Have you been trying to manage that within the team? I mean, how have you achieved that?
I think the most important thing was to just give one day off to the team and being back working the next day. Also on that day off, there were people working at the base. So I think that's a signal that we want to do more. We are not satisfied just with the Prada Cup. We really want to use every opportunity to win the America's Cup. It's an opportunity. And doesn't come every day. That's the most important one.
You've been running the much talked about dual helmsman setup on board with Jimmy Spiddle as your starboard side helm. So no dedicated tactician. I mean, it's pretty unconventional. And I know in commentary, certainly in the beginning, we were pretty hard on the setup. How hard has it been to actually make that work? And is it still a, you know, a work in progress?
It was clearly working very well from the beginning when we were talking about maneuvering, because obviously you got always control of the boat. There is no walking around, running around and switching, you know, hands on top of you, behind you, wherever. But what we didn't face until the real racing was the heat of the tactical calls. And, you know, when you switch from one role to the other, it's not an easy switch. You have to become from foil trimmer, you become helmsman and tactician at the same time, and then back to the other one. And when you race, it's, the dynamics are a little bit different. So when we finally face that problem, I think the most important thing was to react well and to analyze what the other guys were doing better than us and adapt those situations to our case. And I think, again, the coaches have done a fantastic job analyzing every detail of the communication. I mean, obviously, we will still make mistakes like any other team, but there were a few mistakes which were really basics, which we did, and hopefully we are not doing them again.
You're thinking back, I mean, that epic battle you had with Ineos,
yeah.
With nine lead changes.
Yes.
You know, when you look back on this whole cup, that will have been a key moment.
Yes,
it really flagged. Yes. I guess the flaws in it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Shirley. I think that race really told us that there was something wrong in the way we were. I mean, we could have probably closed that race in many situations, and Ineos as well, don't get me wrong, because the performance of the boats on that race was very, very close. Ineos was performing pretty well on that medium strong wind conditions, and but we felt guilty a couple of times on not sealing the deal. Not that it was particularly easy on that sea course with the offshore breeze, but definitely we have to be honest, we did two or three mistakes and we knew that we didn't want to do them again. So we are very hard on ourselves and we improve. We improve was actually good. And I think that potentially this is a little bit of the advantage of the challenge team to have done so many races and face all those problems.
Let's talk a bit about Jimmy and what sort of influence he's had on the team. I mean, he said to me, you know, he'd been working hard with Philippe Presti, your coach, to contain the Italian emotion within the whole team. I mean, how much has he shaped the culture of the campaign?
He's been a great help. His experience is unbelievable. And I personally, I've been learning a lot from Jimmy, the way he managed the crew and how calm he is, even in the hard moments and hard situations. Very composed. So I think that for me, it's been a great example. I think it's been a great example for the whole team. And I think that him and Philippe together, they are a very strong asset for the team. So yeah, I think he's been really important to have him with us. And I think the more we are together, the more we feel strong as a team.
Just describe for me, I guess, what kind of culture that you have here that he's really influenced?
Well, clearly Latins, Italians in particular, have a little bit of an extra passion when they do things. There's no secret on that. And sometimes it's too much. So I think that sometimes it's better to, you know, reflect a little bit more on things. And I think there are good and bad things about both cultures. And we try to take the best out of both.
We've not seen the New Zealand team since before Christmas. But even then, I mean, they look pretty fast. Their base is right across the viaduct here in Auckland. And of course, I mean, you have pretty sophisticated recon. What do you know about how they look now on the eve of the match?
We know that they've been pushing a lot their package for speed. They have small foils, small rudder. Sometimes they lose control a little bit because of that. So they're not unbeatable, I don't think, but they will definitely be a hard opponent for sure. They have experience. Their whole campaign and package and people, they experience, I think, is the most the biggest asset they have.
How does the recon work? I mean, they're out a lot. They're sailing a lot.
They are sailing a lot, and we are always on top of them, or behind them, or on the side. We have a great team, young guys that are very passionate about what they're doing. They're led by one of our coaches, Jacopo. And he's working a lot on collecting pictures, videos of when they dock in, dock out, when they do races. So yeah, we have a lot of material. Most of the biggest problem is really to check all the material we have and learn from it. But I think it's been a great asset to check on every team, not just Team New Zealand, and try to don't just copy them, because sometimes they do wrong things like we do. It's about selecting what is right and what is wrong.
All right, let's talk racing. Those pre-starts in the Prada Cup final against Ben Ainsley's Ineos were on the whole, I mean, they were pretty full on, close quarters, fully committed. What's your approach to the match likely to be? I mean, where do you see your real strengths?
I think that we have been doing a very good job on the pre-start. Statistically, we have a very good success rate. And whenever we have lost a start, we were still in the race. So probably has losing a start, we're still, I mean, in contact. And I think we have to carry on. That's as simple as that. We need to keep doing that part of the job, which is an important one, especially if the boats are going in similar speeds. I think we still need to do that very well. Philippe Presti is our head coach on that side, and he's been doing a fantastic job. We are using a lot the simulator for it as well. Racing one against the other and trying to learn every move, possible move. But we're going to face the Kiwis. They may have some new ones, and we have to be ready for everything.
What do you think the real strengths of Luna Rossa are?
I think that the team is strong. And obviously we have done a package that is pretty good in light conditions. So, I mean, I think we have to be honest and say that we feel better in the lightest conditions. We're definitely better than Ineos and the Americans in the light wind. It's just a little bit of an edge in speed and maneuverability of the boat, and everything becomes a lot easier. You become the best tactician and and the best sailor. But if your package is slightly better, it's just about, you know, keeping it simple and don't make big mistakes. And so I don't know how it's going to go against the Kiwis, but I have the feeling that it's going to be a little bit like the same trend, because we have bigger foils and compared to them. And so probably that will be the case. But it's hard to judge at this stage.
We're only days away, Francesco, aren't we, from it all becoming very real. What about for you? I mean, how does, just describe for us, I guess, how that feels. You know, you're just about to enter the biggest stage of them all.
It feels like a great opportunity, And so far for me personally, it's been like a dream. Everything has been fantastic. The whole campaign so far, a lot of work, but a lot of rewards as well. But the final goal is there, and it's just behind the corner, and I don't want to lose this opportunity. So I'm going to, and I know that everybody in the team is going to think like me. We have to give all we have in work, concentration, and we need to finish saying, oh, we have tried everything we had, and it's a great opportunity. We need to use it. And.
Francesco, thank you very much for
your time.
We wish you all the best.
Always a nice to chat with you, Shirley. Thank you.
Francesco Bruni from Luna Rossa Prada Pirelli, one of the gentlemen of our sport, recorded just days before the 36th America's Cup match was due to get underway. Sailing against the Italian team, it is of course the defenders, one of the most experienced teams in Cup history, the most experienced in the modern era, the imposing might of Emirates Team New Zealand. Team New Zealand won the Cup back in Bermuda in 2017, after missing out on winning 4 years earlier, in the very well-documented AC34 of San Francisco. This is their seventh Cup campaign, their third defence of the Cup. And with a constant presence in the Cup arena for several decades, they are a formidable opponent. Before Christmas, the team took part in the World Series Regatta, staged here as the first ever opportunity for the four teams to race against each other in their brand new AC75s. The Kiwi boat looked fast, helmed by the very capable Pete Burling. But post-Christmas, they did suffer a capsize in some practice races staged ahead of the Prada Cup. Since then, they have spent a lot of time on the water. While their potential challengers were getting race tuned, the Kiwi boat was out putting in the testing miles. There's been rumours of incredible top speeds out on the water. But when the Cup gets underway, it'll be the first time their black and red AC75 goes head to head in meaningful competition. We spoke to Ray during lockdown, so via video link, sat in our respective places of work just across the viaduct from each other. Well, Ray, thanks so much for joining us. I know everyone is so busy in Cupland, so thanks for making the time. I want to kick off by asking you, and we're in Auckland, it's home of the team, it's a home America's Cup. How big a deal is that, defending the cup on home soil?
Oh, look, when you put it like that, you know, it does bring home how important it is to us. You know, this has been a huge part of our life. It's every sailor's dream is to win the America's Cup and then defend it in your home waters. So when you say those words, it does ring home how special it is for all of us. And, you know, it's incredibly exciting. You know, there's so much passion out there, as we've seen with the Italians. And, you know, every team celebrates a win well, but probably no one better than the Italians. And, you know, there's a huge amount of passion out there. And, you know, this is just so exciting. It's what we've been putting our lives on hold for the last few years, and it's all coming to a head.
And quite nice to be at home, I bet. I mean, Ray, Emirates Team New Zealand have been on their own for the last few months. The challengers have been fighting it out on the water. How hard is that, not really being involved in the racing?
Oh, yeah, it is hard. You know, it's what the America's Cup has been all about over the years, and going back to that sort of a format, it adds a lot of excitement. You know, like, yeah, we're not doing the racing for sure. That's a disadvantage. But we've also been able to use all of that time to keep developing the boat and focusing on just ourselves and making the boat go quicker and learning from their racing. You know, the analysis that you guys are doing and the TV footage is so full on that we feel like we're there on the boats with those guys. So we're learning as much as they are. We hear all of their comms. You know, we see the numbers, so we're getting a huge amount out of their racing as well.
I'm not sure if what we're saying is that helpful. You mean watching the pictures?
No, I think you know, you're picking it pretty well. You know, you're getting put on the spot there at times and having to call it, you know, so you're doing a great job. Yeah.
You know, how useful has it been to watch and to analyse the competition? I mean, what are you looking for?
Yeah, no, it's hugely valuable just seeing the sailing techniques. Obviously, the boats are getting more and more manoeuvrable as the teams get more familiar with them. So that's completely changed the dynamics, which is a good thing. It's what we've always hoped would happen with this class. So it's turning into a proper match racing event. No one can say that this America's Cup is not a sailor's event and it's a match racing event. There's a lot of people concerned about that from the outset. And, you know, it's turned into the most spectacular high-octane match racing event we've ever seen.
What do you know about your opponent, Luna Rossa? What are the team's thoughts on your competitors as we head into the match?
Although, you know, we know a lot. Obviously, they were the best challenger, no question. They deserve the win. No one disputes that. They were the fastest boat across the range in the end. They took a while to get there, but their performance has got better and better. They're sailing the boat really well. There's a good dynamic there with Bruni and Francesco. They're doing a great job with their communication, and obviously their match racing skills are, you know, really coming into their own now. So they're sailing the boat really well around the course. So they don't seem to make many errors in boat handling anymore. So they're just getting more and more refined as all of the teams are doing. But, you know, certainly they rose to the occasion. Yeah, they're going really well.
I mean, the rate of development has been extraordinary. When I look back at some of the footage pre-Christmas, it's a different sport.
I know. Well, we're all, you know, analysing the racing. You go back to some of those earlier pre-starts and the boats were pretty much out of control, some of those windier ones, compared to the level we expect to be at now when we're on the water. It's quite a different show. So, you know, it really has stepped up a lot. And it's going to be a real ding-dong battle. Now we're going to look forward to a pretty spectacular event for sure.
We're looking forward to it as well. Ray, when we've seen recent glimpses of your boat out on the water, it feels sometimes like we're looking at the future of the AC75. And there's been plenty of gossip among the Kiwi press of some pretty phenomenal speeds over the last few days. You know, how accurate is that?
Well, the boat's red, so it looks like it's fast. So I think that's part of our secret weapon. There's a lot of red on the boat. Now, look, the boat's going really well. There's no question. And there's, you know, the boats will be faster again in the future. You know, it's a constant evolution. There's things we would have liked to have done that we haven't had time to do. And the way the rules are set up, you're making decisions a long time ago. But we're very, very happy with the package we have. And, yeah, it's going really well. Certainly uprange when there's a bit of breeze and can really stretch your legs. It's phenomenal what these boats are achieving. It's just time on the water and getting that confidence to push the boat hard in the breeze is, you know, a lot of the boats haven't had much time in sailing in 20 plus knots. And as you'd know, the more you sail in those conditions, just the faster you get by purely spending time on the water and being able to push the boat hard. And you're not just nursing it. You're not just going into a survival mode. You're actually pushing the boat really, really hard in those conditions. So that's where, you know, a lot of the performance comes from as well.
I mean, you have been sailing a lot. There's not many days where the crane's not up and you're out. You know, how important, that's obviously been a priority to you, to time on the water.
Yeah, well, we just get more comfortable all the time now to sail in breeze. With these type of boats, you do get a little nervous when you're hitting that 50 knot mark, but now it's just standard. And then once you get comfortable with that, well, then you're just looking for more and more. So, you know, the guys are doing an incredible job sailing the boat uprange, and, you know, they've got to be on their game. There's no question. It's not easy, but once you know the limits of the boat and the boat's, you know, working well and it's doing what you're expecting it to do, then you can just push harder and harder.
You've raced a little with the Challengers in practice racing before the Prada Cup. What changes have you made since then? How much better are you as a racing outfit?
Yeah, we've changed a lot. All of the sails are new. They've all evolved. A couple of mainsails and about six jibs are all new. Since then, I think we're onto a new mast. Maybe that was about the time we changed to the new mast. Certainly the latest appendages have been on, so we haven't sailed against anyone with those. New rudder, new elevator. So pretty much everything's changed since we last sailed against the teams.
All right, let's talk. Let's talk racing. I mean, there was much talk pre-Christmas about how the Kiwis were fast, but perhaps lacking in the aggressive racing department. Ray, you have a background in match racing, and for a long time you were Dean Barker's tactician in the whole match racing circuit. Are you surprised how combative it's all been so far?
To be honest, not really. We're always going to be heading down that sort of a path where it was going to end up being a proper ding-dong battle. And so not really surprised. I'm very relieved to see that these boats can manoeuvre very accurately and controlled. You can speed up and slow down. So even though it looks like it's really, really close, the guys are in control. Even more so than the catamarans. So, you know, that's really pleasing. So we are expecting the guys to put the boat into some pretty tight, difficult situations and have control. So, you know, the umpiring team are doing an amazing job. They've got incredible tools there and we're expecting a lot out of them. And they expect a lot out of themselves as well. So, no, I think, you know, we will expect those Italians to, you know, really push hard and put the boat in difficult positions, and we'll certainly push back when the opportunity arises. But, you know, it's always a risk-reward sort of a balance. And the way these penalties are, it's such a small loss. So really you're looking for control of, your opponent rather than a penalty.
How concerned are you by Jimmy Spittle?
Oh, look, he's a fierce competitor and, you know, he's got a fantastic reputation in the America's Cup. He's really competitive and fierce, but he's not random. So that's, you know, so that's quite good to know. We're not going to get anything, you know, out of the usual. It'll just be accurate and disciplined. And so, therefore, I don't think he's going to put themselves at risk. He'll just do make some smart decisions, and therefore, you know, you can deal with that. He won't throw the dice and leave it up to the judges. He'll be calculated, and then so long as you understand those sort of moves and counter moves, it ends up just being a good proper match race. So you know, their whole team is good. Like I say, you know, they're going to be hard to beat for sure.
Thinking about the stars, Ray, you're the chase boat training partner for the guys. So using the chase boat as an opponent in training, I mean, just explain perhaps how that works, how useful it is, and, you know, in reality, how does that all work?
Well, for sure, you'd rather another AC-75 out there, but it's just not a reality. Even though as a defender, we're allowed to sail against our boat one, it's just not feasible. You know, the resource required to keep two boats going and two sailing teams, it's just not an option for us. So, yeah, we have, and we did before in Bermuda, use the chase boat. It works really well. It's not perfect, but you can create situations and put the guys under pressure and create a few drills and you know, as you know, pushing and leading in the pre-start, there's a lot of rules around that, what you're trying to achieve. And we can create those moments. And, we've got to really try to keep it as realistic as possible. As soon as it's not realistic, you kind of defeat the purpose and you lose credibility really, really quickly with the guys. So, you know, that's very important that you try to keep it real. And then when it is a real situation and real lessons are learning, getting learned, it's a real buzz for everyone. They go, wow, that was pretty cool. We're onto a new thing here and we can see where this is tracking. This whole match racing side of AC-75s is a real thing. It's not just about speed. It's about, you know, sailing well.
We wondered in commentary if you sort of follow the dot, if it's a prearranged play, I guess, in the rib. I mean, how do you make that work?
Well, you can't really with match racing. It's always a move, counter move with your opponent. So there's no such thing as having a set play because it's just so dependent on what the other boat's doing at that time. So you need to be able to react with split second decisions to what the other boat's doing. And it may look pretty vanilla and plain of what's going on, but actually there's a lot of detail in how these boats are setting up for the start. And that's the level it's getting to now. It's just move, counter move, and jockeying position. And, you know, coming off the line even is a good start. You just don't want to be on the back foot.
How much of a priority has all that been? You know, I'm remembering, you know, we saw you practice racing at the beginning of January. It didn't go out to the world, but it was, you know, a practice race. And I guess Ben Ainslie made the team look, you know, a little bit unpolished in that department. I mean, how much of a priority has it been for the whole team?
Yeah, well, it's been a huge focus. And you do learn a lot from those races. And, you know, we took away a huge amount from some of those difficult races we had. And clearly, you know, Ben and Giles were on a real roll there and clearly setting the standard of this is how you've got to be now. You've got to communicate. You've got to be looking ahead. This is a proper yacht race. There are wind shifts and a gust of wind makes a huge amount of difference, way more than the performance between the boats. Obviously, you know, half a knot more breeze is potentially two knots more boat speed. So, you know, it's a real sailor's race now. So we've learned a lot of lessons from those races and the guys we have changed the way we sail the boat a little bit more, and it's more just in communication and just embracing the racing side of it more. We were so focused on speed for so long, and you know, you always had to switch into actually racing at some point, and you know, it's clearly been upon us for the last couple of months now, and it's been that's been a real fun part of the campaign for us sailors to debrief that and get into the detail and rejig the simulator so it's more about racing each other and not just about performance. There's been a really, really exciting aspect of this America's Cup that it is a proper, you know, match racing event.
How intense has the campaign been? I mean, the team base is right in the middle of the viaduct here. And from the outside, it all looks very tight. I mean, even for us, the official broadcast team, Emirates Team New Zealand can be a fortress. Why is that? And perhaps, you know, give us a glimpse, describe the culture for us.
Well, there's a huge amount of pride within the team for sure. And there's a huge amount of respect for what's gone on before us and the caliber of people that have been through the place before us. And we feel they've all contributed to where we are today for sure. But I think, you know, we have a very strong awareness that we're pretty much being judged by every former Team New Zealand employee over the years. So we feel that there's a standard we've got to attain to. And that's good. I think that drives the culture. You know, that's part of who we are. There's a standard that we daily sort of strive to be at. And I think that's, you know, that's part of how we are who we are. We know there's a level we need to be at every single day, and we need to get the most out of each day as efficiently as possible. But it's very much just the norm for us now. We come to work, we're in this big flash fancy building. It's been incredible to be able to have this facility, but we knew last campaign we were in a flappy old tent just down the road, and that worked as well. So it's not about the building, it's about the people and that culture that you say. And it's been interesting because there's a lot of people joined the team for the first time. And they're walking into this building that has a lift and an elevator, and this is all pretty foreign to us. And to them, it might seem like normal. So it's been pretty interesting that dynamic. But really, it just keeps coming back to the people.
I mean, for those listeners who are listening to this and haven't been to New Zealand, they perhaps don't realise that the America's Cup is a national institution here. You can't go anywhere, can you, Ray? But you have a discussion about it. You know, you're in a taxi, I'm at the gym, you know, it's on the radio. Every time you switch on the television, there's something, you know, about the team, or there's a debate, an intricate debate about, you know, American Magic's capsize or you guys. It's so fascinating. And I'm wondering really how that adds to the whole atmosphere for you, and perhaps the pressure even.
Yeah, I think you sort of got to sort of blanket a little bit, and it's like I'm sure you've experienced the same when you're in your Olympic events, and that where you end up, you're just on the race course. You sort of blank out a lot of that external, and I think there's a lot of it for the guys here. It's interesting because we are talking about the event. And we have, you know, the dockout show, for example, and that's actually a real key part of it for the guys and the event, and how should and shouldn't that be done. But that's an opportunity for the guys to actually really respect the fact that this has stepped up another level and you know, embrace the moment. This is pretty special, and that's a change for us to go out and actually clearly be in front of the public. Normally we just go out and we're doing our own thing daily, and you hardly even notice the fact that everyone you go past is filming us and putting it on their Instagram and getting us in trouble with the harbour master. But there's a huge amount of passion for the team and the sport, and now the amount of stuff that gets posted daily with us just sailing up and down the harbour is just incredible. So, it's exciting to be part of it. It's great to have the country behind us. This is, you know, it's a shame we're not surrounded by super yachts as we look out the window here, and it's not what it could have been, but it's going to be spectacular, and, you know, the world's watching on TV. So, yeah, it's great for the sport.
How much expectation is there on the whole team, but especially perhaps the guys on the boat to deliver? I mean, how much is at stake, Ray?
Oh, a huge amount. Everything's at stake, you know. But that's what we do. We love the competition. The guys love the competition. You know, there's so much at stake because, unlike pretty much any other sporting event, the winner has complete control of what happens next with the event and the class of boat. So, you know, there's not many other sports where there's so much at stake. So really, you know, we love the pressure of that. A lot of the guys, or certainly our guys, rise to the occasion and actually sail and perform better under pressure, which is a unique characteristic that you have to look for when you're deciding your crew. And, you know, that's the makeup of our guys, is they actually really, really enjoy the racing side of it. And the more pressure, the better they go.
Well, Ray, we're looking forward to it. I mean, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. We wish you all the very best for you and your team. Thanks.
Thanks, Shirley. Keep up the good work. Cheers.
There we have it, podcast listeners. Thanks for joining us. And I hope that whets the appetite for the upcoming racing. It's great to get a glimpse inside the two teams before things really get underway here in Auckland. If you're new to the podcast and you like what you hear, take a glimpse over the back catalogue of America's Cup stories. We talked to all the designers from this cup back in March 2020. They give us a great insight into these amazing AC75s. Or why not listen to our long sit down with Jimmy Spittle to grab a real insight into the man co-helming Italian challenger Luna Rossa. Before racing gets underway, there's still much to enjoy in part two, as my co-cup commentator Kenny Reid and I preview the upcoming cup action. Chat about what we've seen so far, what we can expect, but also sit down with Ineos's Team UK's Freddie Carr as he gives us the inside line on what we can see from the two teams in the cup match. Producer Tim's busy here in Auckland as part of the broadcast team, so a massive thanks to Tim for finding the time to produce the pod. It's a long job getting the podcast out to you in good shape. So Tim, as ever, thanks for all your efforts. Please do let us know what you think about the podcast, or if you've any questions about Cup World, do get in touch. I'm at Shirley Sale on Instagram and Twitter, just me on Facebook. And please do remember to like, review and subscribe on whatever platform you join us on. Until next time, thank you so much for listening and sail safe, everyone.
This is Castle One, race officer speaking.
Cluster's coming here.
A bit lower and faster here.
Still gaining on the line then.
We're looking at 10.5 and 42.
This is Castle One standing by. Out.